Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. Greetings and salutations on this cold, ice cold Sunday. Well, we have a lot in store for you today. We're going to have a special guest joining us at the second part of the show. And also, we're going to have someone calling from overseas. So you're going to really, really enjoy this. We're going to talk a little bit about Mandela. Of course, everybody's been covering Mandela, and we're also going to talk a little bit about President Obama's economic speech. And so to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So the phone lines are open. But before we take some calls, I'd like to introduce you to the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprises. And I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I want to first ask you, how is this winter storm treating you? It's been pretty disruptive.
It has been a tad bit disruptive, but I did venture out yesterday and pick up a few things, and it wasn't too bad, and I ventured out this morning and made it out to church. So the highways are pretty good, and most of your side streets are getting better, I think, because things melt and then they freeze back up is what makes the morning so treacherous. Ran across a few slick spots, but, you know, I'm a Midwesterner, and I've been in Kansas and lived in Colorado, so I think I pretty much know how to do this kind of weather here.
Yeah, I was looking at the travel channels and looking at some of the football games. They kind of whited out, snowed out. Well, at least in theory, they still out there playing, though.
Yeah, they was crazy. It was almost like a couple of commentators was like the players act like they was playing the backyard football game, because some of the things they were doing on the field, you was like, is this a real game or what? You know, sliding and all sorts of things. And that Philadelphia game, that snow was pretty deep. So it was like 8 inches in the middle of the field.
Yeah. So I want let's get right to the main story for today, or I should say the main story that's troubling most people hearts across the world, not just the nation, but across the world. And that is, of course, Mandela has passed away. And what does this mean to you as an African-American living in the United States, although Mandela was overseas in Africa? What connection do you have, A, and B, what does his passing mean to you?
Wow. Well, when you think about what Mandela fought for, was jailed for, as it relates to apartheid, and in its most simplest form, apartheid means apart from, as did segregation was apart from as well. So when you think about the parallels of the plight of the African people in South Africa and the plight of blacks, African Americans, Negroes, colors, whatever name we are, here in America, the parallels are very similar. And so when you think about those here that during the times when things were most segregated, the jailings that they endured, the police beatings that they endured in the 60s, you saw that play itself out in the coverage of what was happening in South Africa with Mandela. So it's a connection that can't be denied and can't be glossed over. I mean, it's amazing to me the portrait that the media wants to put in our mind about Mandela is when he comes out of prison, which is 27 years later. He's older, and so all your footage as of late has been of him in his elder years. But if you go back and you look at this strong man that he was prior to going in and what he represented in just his physical strength, I mean, this was a professionally trained boxer as well, and so he wasn't, you know, some puny little old man that was just fighting for freedom. You know, he was a strapping, as they say, young man fighting for freedom. And so that they want to change the image of him to make him, as they do with Martin and everybody else, they try to make be also passive and nonviolent. But we know that the change that was achieved was violent. You know, it didn't people, the oppressors didn't just wake up and decide, oh, okay, we'll do right by people. People had to fight. People had to die. There was bloodshed, and people were jailed. People were separated from their families. A whole host of things happened. So, you know, I don't want us to forget that part of who Mandela was and what he stood for. So to me, he's more than just a symbol of freedom. And I even said, on the day that he passed, that I felt some kind of way about his passing. And I say that in terms of this was a man who in my lifetime I got to see go through the struggle. I remember the Paul Simon songs and Stevie Wonder and the artists and the Alfred Woodard and Sidney Poitier and all those people, those artists, those actors, those entertainers, standing up for something then and being a part of that fight and being a part of that struggle. And so I remember it. It's nothing that I've read about as I've read about King and read about Malcolm. You know, I saw this. You know, this was in my lifetime, and I think that's why it was so personal to me to see and to follow his life. Because it's been a part of my life. And so I think, you know, in terms of what he means to me, it's hard to put in the words because embodies so much and he endured so much, and yet you know, the Lord saw fit to keep him here for such a length of time, to be on this earth for 95 years and to see things go from one way to another in his lifetime. He can say what he saw in his lifetime, what he was a part of in his lifetime. And I just wonder what the majority of us will say, what will our legacy be in our lifetime? What will the dash in between the year of your birth and the year of your death, what will it say? What will people have to say about you? And so it kind of restructures some, for me, my mindset about, am I doing enough to further the cause, whatever that cause is? Have I even decided on a cause? And if I have, then what am I doing to help advance it? And am I doing enough, and could I do more? And so that's what he's done. He's caused me to, his death has caused me to reflect into my own sense of advocacy or activism or whatever the word is, to see if I'm doing what it is I'm supposed to be doing as just a human being, period, just as someone who is placed on this earth for a reason, for a purpose, then what is it, and am I doing enough of it?
You know, a few things that it was so much in your comment there, and I don't want to kind of unpack pieces of it for a minute. I want to talk a little bit about what you said about the media portrayal of him, because it is true that when you see a portrait, whether it be a video or a picture or some illustration of Nelson Mandela, you see an old, fickle person as opposed to this strong, strong-willed person. And so what do you think is behind this portrayal of Nelson Mandela to be that image as opposed to what he truly was in the past? I mean, when you recapture a person's life, you want to look at it at different stages. But it turns out that every time that we look at Nelson Mandela is really at this later stage as opposed to his earlier stage. And then the other thing I want to kind of talk about is his time in prison and what that meant, and how in the 1990s people were advocating for him to get out of prison. But first, let's visit this component of the media's portrayal of him. Why is that? And I want to also extend that question to talk about the recent developments in that what happened with Ted Cruz's Facebook page and with Rush Limbaugh's statement about how the media is portraying Nelson Mandela to be an advocate for, or at least a portrayal of, President Obama. So let's talk about first about the media portrayal.
Well, you can compare it to how we spend an awful lot of time talking about the part of the speech for Dr. King and the March on Washington that talks about the dream, but they don't spend a whole lot of time talking about the bounce check and the insufficient funds and what got him to the dream. So it's the same thing. So they talk about the parts of history that are comfortable for them, that makes it not be so bad and that they don't have to feel so bad about things. So it's easier to see him in the later stages when he's not as threatening and when he's calm and he's peaceful and he's in a forgiving mode and he's all about reconciliation. But he's only at that point of reconciliation because of the struggle. He didn't get to reconciliation just because he woke up one morning and, okay, I'm at this period. He got there because of the struggle. And so because of that, let's not talk about why he went to jail. Let's talk about when he came out of jail and what he did when he came out and how he became the first African president of South Africa and how he came over here to the United States and how we treated him when he came to visit us after he got out of prison. But let's not talk about how things were under President Reagan and previous presidents and their labeling him as a terrorist and keeping him on that till 2008, hello, where he has to get special, up until that time, he had to get special permission to even come to the United States. And you would had, at that time, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice having to grant him permission. What in the world? And see, those are the things we don't want to talk about. So it's easier to keep him in that role of where he appears to be overly humble and gracious and apologetic and forgiving, because that's how they get to feel better about themselves and what they've done. So you won't see the young Mandela portrayed often enough for me, because to show him, then you really show what his struggle was all about.
And so you show strength. You show strength in that.
And you show strength. You show strength and you show determination.
Yeah.
You show fearlessness. You show resolve is what you show. You show a man who was determined that by any means necessary, I am pressing forward. You will not continue to treat my people such as this. And there you have it, you know. And so when you look at, to go down some of your crazy people that have been out there, when you look at the fact that Ted Cruz probably thought he was doing a great thing by, you know, acknowledging Nelson Mandela and what he had accomplished, only to have the people that follow him say all sorts of evil things about not only Nelson Mandela, but now about Ted Cruz.
Let me address that particular comment for a minute for the listening audience out there. So Ted Cruz acknowledged the passing of Nelson Mandela by simply stating Nelson Mandela will live in history as an inspiration for defenders of liberty around the globe. He stood firm for decades on the principle that until all South Africans enjoyed equal liberties, he would not leave prison himself, declaring in his autobiography, "Freedom is indivisible. The chains on any one of my people were the chains on all of them. The chains on all of my people were the chains on me." Because of his epic fight against injustice, an entire nation is now free. We mourn his loss and offer our condolences to his family and the people of South Africa. Now, I have to admit, Ted Cruz making a statement like that just shows, A, his intellect, his B, his connectedness to real-world issues, you know, but yet and still, he doesn't understand that he's created this monster. And so this monster, because of his opposition against President Obama's Affordable Care Act, which is also called the Obamacare in many circles, because of the monster he has created around that issue, when really, or in reality, is really out there to help people. This is some of the comments that people made against Ted Cruz's comments. One comment from one person says, "Sad to see you feel this way, Ted. He was a terrorist. I guess you have only seen the Hollywood movies." And then another said, "This would be the same just to say silent on the subject. Mandela admitted to tossing grenades into school buses occupied by children, and his wife was a proficient practitioner of the tire and gasoline combo. Why don't you all Mandela lovers head on over to South Africa and see what's going on now that Mandela's people, have control over the nation? He was also a huge supporter of abortion. Don't put him too high. Careful, Mr. Cruz." So you see, this monster he has created because of one issue has now trickled over into these other issues. What do you make of those type of comments?
It's sad because to the hatred that so many people still have in their hearts toward people of color. And it brings to mind even some of the statements that those same people probably have said about our president. And so when you look at how they are misinformed, because a lot of what they say is so wrong. It's so not even, it's not even in the same hemisphere as truth and reality. They are so far out into another realm of, what is it, an alternative universe, with some of their thoughts and processes and what they tend to base their comments on, that is really kind of sad. You really just feel kind of sorry for them, that they're just so uninformed. But then you wouldn't know they were that uninformed until they started talking. So then when they say stuff, you kind of like, do you even waste the air, breath, energy to respond? Because those people, you're never going to convince that they're not right. So, but it's unfortunate for Ted Cruz that he had a moment to shine, and that the very people that follow him just kind of tore him down to pieces, and that's kind of sad for him.
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes to show you, you know, his political posturing, you know, is one thing, and he's doing it. You know, people, there has been suggestions he's doing it for the money. You know, he's raising, Ted Cruz, that is raising a lot of money by, you know, going out against the Affordable Care Act. He's making these statements, getting these people riled up, when he's actually basically on a government plan itself, because he has a government job getting government benefits. So it's funny how he ties it into, you know, this not wanting to have the government involved in our lives, and he's basically participating in it. But when you have these people are not as informed as he is, because he's a well-informed person, that's why he can position himself to do these things and make these statements. But the people that are not so informed, then, you know, they generate this energy that just takes a life of its own. And now we're seeing a lot of the byproduct of that. So speaking of energy taking a life of his own, I want to now shift to Rush Limbaugh's comment.
Duh.
Now, he also made a comment that was in opposition of, if you will, for what what has happened. There's an article on The Root that talks about how conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh railed against the White House and the media on Friday, complaining that both were trying to make Nelson Mandela's death all about President Barack Obama. I don't know how that could have happened, but during the broadcast, Limbaugh knocked Obama for releasing a statement shortly after the announcement of his death. He says, "I am one of the countless millions who drew inspiration from Nelson Mandela's life," what the president said, referencing protests against apartheid as one of his first political actions, the report shows. "I cannot fully imagine my own life without the example set by Nelson Mandela." So Russ responded with this. "Now, forgive me, but if you are a low-information voter and you're watching the CBS Evening News last night," and now he's very familiar with the low-information voters, I might add. He continues by saying, "you would come away with the impression that the important thing about Nelson Mandela's death was that he looked up Barack Obama when he came to town, and he had a picture of Obama when he died." Classic, folks. Absolutely classic. "And the rest of the media is so predictable. It's not even worth spending a lot of time on it, because you can see it is as well as I. And even the White House is on this. The White House is publishing Obama photos about the death of Nelson Mandela. And everything the White House is putting out about the death of Nelson Mandela has Obama in it. They're called selfies now, these pictures. It's like when Rosa Parks died, Obama made a beeline to the museum where the bus is that Rosa Parks refused to go to the back of, and he took a seat." I mean, what is this? But his statement about the president acknowledging Mandela, he's trying to tie pictures of him, of President Obama, to Nelson Mandela, as if this was a concerted effort for the president to tie himself to Nelson Mandela. How do you come up with these things? Jima, how do you come up with these things?
Well, I think it goes back to your original statement, of his original statement of low-information voters, which he is a low-information person as well, although he thinks he knows a lot. It's people like that really irritate me. They think if they say the same thing over and over again, it makes it true, and just because they said it, it makes it true. And so the fact that the president when he spoke on Thursday, hearing of Nelson Mandela's death, when he spoke about it, and just making a point that most people probably knew if you've read anything about the president, was that his one of his first involvements in politics was around apartheid. So that shouldn't really have caught anybody off guard. If you've done any, if you've read anything about the president, you would know that. So for Rush to try to make it be something more than it is and bigger, and it just doesn't make sense. But I stopped trying to make sense with Rush Limbaugh a long time ago. So it's just kind of like he talks just to hear himself talk, and there's some millions of people that listen to him. I'm just not one of them.
Well, that makes the two of us. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about the president's economic speech. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gemma. And Ask Gemma says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. You know, the president has done a lot over the last 5 years. Now, a lot of people has criticized him for a number of things. But in my estimation, these things don't stick. For example, they were criticizing him most recently about the website being down. Now, they did it. When I say they, the media, as well as the right-wing Republican Party, did an all-out blitz on the website. Now, everything was about the website, not, and they tried, they, and did a very good job of tying the website problems with the Affordable Care Act itself. Now, we, or, you know, as non-low information voters know that the website is not representative of the law. The website is one of the mechanisms you get into how you evaluate some of the different healthcare options. But it hasn't anything to do with staying on your parents' insurance till you're 26. It doesn't have anything to do with paying for preventive paying for preventive care services. It doesn't have anything to do with pre-existing conditions, but there was an all-out media blitz trying to tie the two things together. Now, it was quite hilarious to me to see when the website problems were fixed, specifically when they had a record number of users register, like 29,000 within a short period of time. You haven't heard anything about the positive aspects of the website. So the media, you know, in my estimation, was supposed to be about, or at least are supposed to be about, getting the people the information, right? Good or bad. But they're quick to run to the bad issues, but not quick to report the good issues. So the same amount of effort that was put into going against the website, why is it then we don't see even a small fraction of the effort talking about the successes of the website? Jimmy, what's going on here?
Because it was never about the people. I mean, you know, as I stated last week, the Affordable Care Act is more than a website. It has really has nothing to do with the website. It has to do with what the law provides. And so the website is just one other mechanism to allow people to sign up for the law. I mean, when certain things went into effect at the beginning of this year in terms of free preventive checkups where you don't have to pay a copay when you go in for your yearly exam, mammograms and pap smears and all those sorts of things were free, that's been going on all year. I didn't have to sign up for that. Getting certain sorts of medications, your birth control pills and contraception, all those sorts of things, went into place at the beginning of the year. I have to sign up for that. Those things just happen. You know, being able to add your child to your insurance was just a matter of when it came time to update your policy for the next year. You were now, you know, this time last year when your company provided your insurance and you had that 30-day window to sign up, you now could go back and add that child that you had once had dropped because come January of this year, your child was going to be covered. So, so those things were already happening. And so the website now is for those people that had no insurance. The things that were already in place were for those of us that were blessed enough to already be covered and already have affordable, as much as it could be, insurance with the company. So now we're at the part of the law that's going to hit the real millions of people that have been uncovered for so long. And so comes the website. Okay, it was what it was. It did what it did. It didn't hold a candle. It didn't whatever. And now we are 30 days later where he said, here's where we're going to be 30 days later. This will be fixed by such and such a date. And he did that. They can say what they want to say. It was done. However many people they had to bring in to get it done, that's one thing you can say about President Obama. When he say he's going to do something, it's going to happen. So when he
stood right
before American people
right
and apologized and was taking all this heat from everybody, left side of the media, the right side of the media, people in the middle of the media, I mean, they beat him down about a website. Lost sight of the fact of the amount of people who really, if I ain't had insurance in 10 years and I have an inhaler that I've been using for the last year and a half, You think I'm going to be concerned that I got to go back and try to log on again? That's the least of my concern. I'm hoping I don't have a daggum asthma attack. So, you know, for the people that really needed it, those people understood the need to wait till it got better. For those that were just trying out the system to see if it worked, it had no real impact on their life, they're the ones that created this mass hysteria for no reason. So the reason they're not going to come back and say, oops, we were sorry, because that's just not who they are. They're just not that type. And so we can stop expecting anybody in the media to spend any significant amount of time on what is working now, because to do so would mean they were out of order the first time, and they're just not going to do that.
Okay. All right. That's fair. So let's shift then to another issue that the president has been cited for as being really bad on, and that is the economy. In fact, Mitt Romney ran on it. There's a plethora of Republicans that speaks to the Affordable Care Act being a job killer. And when President got in office, there was millions of jobs being lost. The stock market was at, 6,000 or so. So, but if we look now at the fact that the unemployment rate was at 7%, it was reported. More than 200,000 jobs were just created, or at least was reported as being created. And the stock market is over 16,000, which means it is the highest it's ever been in the history of America. So why is it then that we can't tout that as President Obama's successes? I mean, quite naturally, if you're going to blame him for these same things, shouldn't he get the credit when they approve, when they improve?
Well, of course he should. But that's not going to happen, they're not going to do that, because if the numbers were the same or worse, then he'd be, as you stated, he would be blamed for it. He's not leading. He's not doing this. And yet the American people should be appalled at Congress for its lack of follow through on what it said it was going to do 3 years ago. Congress ran, the House, the Senate, those people that came into office ran on jobs. And yet in the 3 years that they've been in office, they have not passed one jobs bill. And so instead of talking about what the president is doing or not doing, the media, which we know they won't do, but that's who the media should be talking to. They should be talking to John Boehner, who keeps getting up before people talking about he's here for the will of the people. What people? What people is he talking about? That's what I don't understand. When he says he's for the will of the American people, what American people is he talking about? Because most American people are concerned about jobs and the economy and health care. And yet those are the very things that he has spent little to no time legislating. They have created no jobs bills. They've tried to repeal the Affordable Care Act 47 times, I believe, and they put us in a government shutdown. They wasted all this money, and yet, they're supposed to be the party that's fiscally responsible, and everything they allegedly do is about the budget and money and saving it, and yet they've wasted it. They've wasted money. But no one is spending enough time in the media informing people of such things. I don't understand it.
Why I think that's really admirable.
He's not going to get the credit. Although he should get it, he's not going to.
Well, that's what I think that's really admirable about the president. He's really has no support out of both the House or the Senate. I mean, even when there are situations where he has to draw the line, almost put the country on the brink of whatever situation at that time, because he's trying to do the right thing and they're just trying to prevent him from doing the right thing, whatever it may be. Even when it comes to something they proposed in the past, the president still, he draws the line and says, no, this is the best for the country. And the Republicans hold out time after time. But yet and still, the president has up to this point has been able to show the successes after successes. Now it hasn't been an easy or smooth road. By no stretch of the imagination, anything you do of that magnitude is going to be easy. So it's admirable to see him you know, being able to move the country forward against all those different, you know, circumstances that, that the Republican Party puts up against him. So, you know, my hat's off to him.
Yeah, for sure.
My hat's definitely
sure.
off to him. So that brings me to, you know, this economic discussion, specifically about the speech he had the other day. I want to talk a little bit about some pieces of the speech. But first, I want to get your take on the speech itself. If you had to give it a grade, what grade would you give the speech, you know, based on the in the context of what we just talked about, the last 5 years?
Well, and the fact that he gave this speech before the numbers came out, I think speaks volumes to a man with a plan and a mission and a vision of where he wants to take the country forward. So in that vein, I would have to give him an A, because it was clear. He was direct in where his focus was. He was very focused in his speech, very connected to people. And I think, and that even showed later when he had the sit-down interview with Chris Matthews, where you saw the connection that he had with where the average American is, not the elite, not those, you know, that was even in his circle before he became president, but just average Joe. You can still feel his connection there. And I think because of that, he can speak to those issues that are in the not-so-distant past for him. See, we forget, and he tells us, I don't know how we forget, but he tells us all the time, he and Michelle were still paying off their student loans.
Yeah,
they didn't
yeah.
pay those off until after the book.
That's real. I mean, that's real.
That's real talk like this.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all been within the last 10 years he's gotten rid of his student loan debt. You know what I'm saying? So those of us with student loan debt understand that. You know, we're looking for a book deal ourselves, but we can pay off our student loan.
That's right.
So I understand that. So I think, you know, in terms of how he said what he said and how he laid it out and what his expectations are, I would have to give him an A. I mean, I was kind of mesmerized by it. I couldn't even get out of the car. I was just, like, driving around. Didn't even want to get out of the car to come run in the house because I didn't want to miss anything. And so I think those are the types of things that when he's clear like that, you really can't say anything but yay. And just let it speak for itself. And that's pretty much why you haven't heard a whole lot of them talk about it, because then they can really say.
Exactly.
He covered all the bases. He covered them all. And they can really say anything. And then on top of that, 2 days later, the job numbers come out, and they're as good as they are. They really don't have nothing to say, because they know they haven't had a hand in doing anything.
Right. Exactly right. You know, as a part of his speech, I want to read for those that have not been allotted the time to go out to hear his speech. I would encourage you to go out to whitehouse.gov and look at the remarks from the president's economic mobility speech. And it lays the entire speech out. And so read through it. It's a lot of good information in there. One of the lines or a couple of the statements he made in the speech was this. He said, over the last 2 months, Washington has been dominated by some pretty contentious debates. I think that's fair to say. And between a reckless shutdown by congressional Republicans in an effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act and admittedly poor execution on my administration's part in implementing the last stage of the new law, nobody has acquitted themselves very well these past few months. So it's not surprising that the American people's frustrations with Washington are at an all-time high. But we know that people's frustrations run deeper than those most recent political debates, or these most recent political debates. Their frustration is rooted in their own daily battles to make ends meet, to pay for college, buy a home, save for retirement. It's rooted in the nagging sense that no matter how hard they work, the deck is stacked against them. And is rooted in the fear that their kids won't be better off than they were, They may not follow the constant back and forth in Washington or at all the policy details, but they experience in a very personal way the relentless decades-long trend that I want to spend some time talking about today. And that is a dangerous and growing inequality and lack of upward mobility that has jeopardized middle-class Americans' basic bargain, that if you work hard, you can have a chance to get ahead. I believe this is the defining challenge of our time, making sure our economy works for every working American. It's why I ran for president. It was at the center stage of last year's campaign. It drives everything I do in this office. You know, you talked about, Jimmy, you talked about it being personal for him. All of these issues that he's been for, on the forefront of his agenda, he's had a personal brush with life with, if you will. Paying for college, you talked about. When you're talking about buying homes, when you talk about the Affordable Care Act, his mom having cancer, the fact that he had student loans, the fact that he had to buy a house in Chicago. I mean, all of these things, he wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He didn't come from a privileged background. So he understands personally with these issues that we're faced with. So that's why I believe he's really connected to these issues, not just because of that's what people say on the platform, but because he has experienced these issues. So by him saying, I believe that this is the defining challenge of our time, making sure our economy works for every working American, he means that. What do you think?
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I believe that it is because of his experience that makes him who he is, that he can stand strong and tall and brush off his shoulders when he has to against the naysayers and against those that have done everything in their power to make him be a president to be looked at with a side eye, or as they say, put an asterisk by his name because they've tried to make him be other and less than and not complete. And in spite of it all, he always comes out on top. He comes out in victory. And there's nothing you can really do about that. You can't when it's your time and it's your season and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, all the stuff that's coming at you is part of the process as well. But it's not gonna stop what you've been charged to do, and he's been given a charge. I believe that. To take care of the American people, to take care of the middle class, the low middle class and low income people in such a manner that they've never been taken care of before. And because there hasn't been anyone to lobby for them. You know, poor people don't have lobbyists. You know, we don't have lobbyists. We have to really rely on the people that say they're there for us. We got to trust them. But because we don't have it, because we're not really giving them anything but a vote, they go and find the person that's going to give them something, whether that's office space, whether that's land, whether that's another donation, you know, to their campaign, whatever it is, you know, we can't give as much. Value isn't as received as such as the person that can write them $1 million check. So it's been a long time since poor people have had an advocate.
I'm glad to see his resolve, right? I mean, you know, typically when you have a person that's advocating for you, they're maced with some type of resistance. Then sometimes they sway a little bit because of, you know, other things happen. People grease their palms and people set them up in a nice way. But he has a sense of resolve that no matter what comes against him, he's going to continue to stay the course. And because of that, you know, we've been able to see small improvements. And these small improvements, you know, as opposed to being going backwards, right? I mean, when you talk about in the grand scheme of things and you talk about the long game, a small improvement is a whole lot better than a regression, you know, because sometimes a regression can take you back, you know, 10, 15 years. In case in point, when the 401ks were dropping like never before, a few years ago, you know, people spent 20, 30 years building up their 401ks. And within a matter of months, they wiped out, you know, 10, 15 years of that. And so to regain that type of a revenue back in a short period of time is almost impossible. You have to be really, really lucky or some other term, not being luck, you know, to be able to get that type of money back. And you know, as Wall Street, you know, people do it on Wall Street all the time. But for the average working American to kind of recoup that type of money, it is going to be hard pressed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're up against another break here, and when we return, we're gonna bring on one of our very special guests. We're going to be talking about male abuse awareness. Now, this is a cause that Petra Luna has been doing for quite some time. And when we return, we're going to start talking a little bit about male abuse awareness. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. Secretary of State Chuck Hagel wrapped up a visit to Afghanistan today with a bit of good news for U.S. forces. A possible budget agreement in Washington may relieve some of the Pentagon's financial woes. From Kabul, NPR's Larry Abramson reports Hagel also told troops the U.S. is optimistic that a bilateral security agreement with Afghanistan will be signed.
President Hamid Karzai has refused to sign a security agreement, and during Hagel's visit, he held no meetings with Karzai, saying there's nothing left to discuss, the pact has already been negotiated and needs to be signed. Speaking to U.S. soldiers in Kandahar province, Hagel said the U.S. wants to have a continuing role after 2014.
But we can't do that unless we have an agreement that needs to be signed by the leader of this sovereign nation.
Hagel is wrapping up a two-day tour of Afghanistan, saying the U.S. believes the Afghan people support the agreement, even if Karzai continues to resist. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Kabul.
A European lawmaker says Edward Snowden will testify before the European Parliament by video link later this month. The former NSA contractor in exile is due to talk about U.S. surveillance. Parliamentarian Jan Philip Albrecht says Snowden himself offered to testify. An EU parliamentary committee has to approve a hearing. If it does, committee members will send Snowden questions, and he would record answers to be played back to the entire Parliament. Pennsylvania's Republican governor has released his plan to use Medicaid dollars to help consumers purchase private health insurance, a move he says could cost less than Medicaid expansion. NPR's Jeff Brady reports the proposal contains several controversial elements that'll require a waiver from the Obama administration.
Governor Tom Corbett's proposal would use expanded Medicaid money to buy private health insurance for some of the state's poorest residents. It would require them to look for work and contribute toward the cost of their health care. Antoinette Krause with the Pennsylvania Health Access Network says she's pleased the governor is finally going to take advantage of federal money available under the ACA.
I think our biggest concern is it looks like it's going to take, you know, the better course of a year and possibly not starting till January 1st, 2015.
The state will hold a series of public hearings before submitting a formal proposal to the Obama administration. Jeff Brady, NPR News, Philadelphia.
Gas prices continue to inch up. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg says they've risen 3 cents over the past 2 weeks because of crude oil.
Crude oil prices have been rippling in. They've been translating themselves into wholesale gasoline prices and now to retail. And I think we're having another ripple coming up very soon, maybe another 2 to 4 cents in the next several days.
The national average for a gallon of regular is $3.28. This is NPR. After some 3 weeks of nearly daily protests in Ukraine, a massive demonstration today. Hundreds of thousands poured into the streets of Kiev demanding President Viktor Yanukovych resign for refusing to sign a deal on economic ties with the European Union. 20 years ago this week, the U.S. signed the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. At the time, it had many opponents, including environmentalists. But NPR's Elizabeth Shogren reports some environmental experts say the worst fears haven't materialized.
Environmental activists warned that under NAFTA, polluting industries would flood to Mexico because environmental regulations there were weakest. They also feared that all three countries would weaken their pollution regulations to compete for companies. As part of NAFTA, the countries created the Commission for Environmental Cooperation, which Evan Lloyd headed until recently.
Now, over the course of some 18 years of very specific studies, what we found is that most of the dire predictions that had been made prior to NAFTA had not come to pass.
Elizabeth Shogren, NPR News, Washington.
In South Africa today, a day of prayer and praise for their former president, Nelson Mandela, who died on Thursday. Among the mourners, Philip Nakia, who says he's praying Mandela's inspiration is carried forward.
He was a great man. He taught us so much, but we all got to learn from him. If we all can follow in his footsteps, South Africa will be a great country. I hope his legacy lives on.
A memorial service will be held Tuesday. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Well, in just a few minutes, we're going to shift the conversation a little bit here to male abuse awareness. And in fact, we're participating in, I think this is our third or fourth annual Male Abuse Awareness Week. This is something that was sponsored by Petra Luna, has really been an integral part of this activity. And I think we have Petra on the line. Petra, is that you?
Yeah, that's me. How you doing?
Hey, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Good, good. Actually, it's the sixth annual Male Abuse Awareness Week, and this is, I think, my fifth year with you.
Wow. That is amazing. It is wonderful. Now, remind the audience a little bit about who you are and about the activities that have been taking place this week.
Okay. Well, who I am is, well, my name is, my real name is Barbara Ochoa. My stage name is Petra Luna, although I did retire from recording for a while. I don't know if I'll go back, but right now I just run my nonprofit. And this year for Male Abuse Awareness Week, we do an annual video with our footage from our event last year. And we also have interviews on our videos. And then yesterday we had a big, our annual event, it was a big event in Union Square, which is downtown San Francisco. It's the big center where they have the, you know, the big Christmas tree lighting, and they have the skating rink, and they have everything. So we did our event yesterday in on a beautiful sunny day, downtown San Francisco. We had Advocate Bill Murray. He flew in from L.A. He talked, and we had the SOS Choir, which is a chorus here, a local chorus here in San Francisco. And, you know, we did. I sang some Christmas tunes. I threw down on some Silent Night. And it was a really good show. Yeah, it was a real good show. And it's just, you know, this is the last day of Male Abuse Awareness Week. So it's just a pleasure to be, you know, with you. For people that don't know what Male Abuse Awareness Week is, it is a week where the anti-abuse world gets together and actually recognizes and honors male victims of abuse. We don't provide services. We promote the cause. We alter the sensitivity of the cause. We break the taboo about the subject. You know, we get out there talking about it. We get people to talk about men concerning domestic violence. We did a lot of talks about domestic violence this year and men, you know, men that were sexually abused as children, and how all these guys need to get into treatment. And that is our message. Just like breast cancer awareness says, get your mammogram. Our thing is these young guys who've been abused, instead of going down the wrong path in life, whether it's, you know, drug abuse or suicide or, you know, but like the 30 to 40% who actually do become abusers, you know, our message is talk about it, start talking about it, and get into therapy. We also encourage and lift up any sort of nonprofit that helps abused males, provide services to them. We encourage other nonprofits to provide services to males. And, you know, this we just open it up. But, you know, it's always been a tough sell. It's a tough cause to sell. It's kind of like, you know, remember the women's suffrage movement, like it took them like 50 years when they started talking about it to where they actually did get the vote. So I feel like we're in those, you know, kind of that first decade of trying to talk about it. But, you know, every year we get more celebrities and more things, you know, like Corey Feldman put out a book called Choreography. He did tell testimony about being sexually abused as a child, and how Corey Haimes, the late Corey Haimes, he was also sexually abused, needed by powerful people in the entertainment industry. So, you know, every year it just seems like people are coming out, more cases are being tried, you know, more guys are talking about it, and that's what we're here to do, is get people to talk about it.
That is awesome. Now, unfortunately, we were not able to get Ken to join us today, Ken Clearwater. He contacted me just moments ago, and in his office, he couldn't, for some reason, get out to the show. He is prepared and was trying to get out, but I just, for some reason, having technical difficulties and unable to do so. But we're still going to go ahead and go forward with the show. The show must go on, of course. And in doing so, I want to ask you, Petra, why are you so passionate about this? I mean, you talked about, you know, the number of years you've been involved in this activity, the number of years that you and I have been able to connect and drive this forward, the growth of the organization that you've seen, and the number of people that are coming to the aid of others in this area. What drives you on this issue?
Well, what started me on the issue is I grew up with, you know, several brothers. And, you know, it was a very, very abusive situation when I was young. And, you know, my poor father went through hell. And, you know, I mean, when when I also, you know, personally, I lived through, you know, not only physical abuse, but emotional abuse, sexual abuse. I was raped several times. I mean, I had a lot of things happen to me. And I felt like when I came to get help and talk about it and treatment and things like that and support, I mean, it was overwhelming, the support that I got. But then, you know, I know that one of my brothers was molested, and, you know, I saw what he went through, and, you know, it was like he had nothing. He had nobody to talk to. And I saw him, you know, withdraw into himself, and it almost destroyed him. There was a time when I thought he wasn't going to go on. So I just felt like, you know, why doesn't he have anybody to talk to? Why is it so unbalanced? And that kind of drove me, you know, that was one of the factors. Another one of the factors is for women, and we kept seeing more women coming forward and more women and more women. And it was like, how do we, I mean, there's just so many victims. It's like, how do we stop generating all these victims? And I actually was sitting in the office with his name was Ken Austin. He used to play for the Pistons, the Detroit Pistons, and he had a domestic violence charity at that time. And he was like, "Well, if you really want to help inoculate domestic violence, child abuse, blah 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 blah, you have to start thinking about the perpetrator." And that conversation just angered me, but I carried that conversation with me for a long time. And I was like, you know, you got to do the math. I mean, if a man grows up to be, you know, a batterer or a wife beater, I mean, he could injure and potentially kill, you know, a handful of women. And I mean, if a man grows up to be a child molester, he could potentially molest hundreds, if not, you know, 1,000, and the numbers are just incredibly huge of how many victims, you know, actually pedophiles have. So when you put, you know, a 30% into that of how many kids grow up to become abusers, I mean, you just got to keep doing the math. It just keeps exploding. Now, if you can get one of these guys to where he'll listen and he will be like, okay, it's okay to talk about it, it's okay to get into treatment. You know, in my mentality, I'm thinking, well, if we could just stop one guy from becoming, you know, an abuser, we've saved potentially thousands of people from becoming molesters, you know what I'm saying? And then, like I said, you know, you've got your other, drug addiction is a huge aspect of how these guys deal with it, because they can't talk about it. A lot of times they don't have an outlet for their pain, and it's so common that they get into drugs and alcohol. And the ones that just cannot deal with it and have nobody to talk to, you know, that's where the suicide rate comes in to play with this cause. So, you know, there's just too many problems that come from children, especially boys, witnessing violence and abuse, or having emotional abuse. I mean, emotional abuse is huge. I don't think people really respect how much emotional abuse affects people, and especially when you look into, like, serial killers and really violent criminals. Sometimes it wasn't, you know, sexual abuse or domestic violence. It was being tortured by an overbearing parent, or degraded, or just dehumanized or demasculinized. And you know, these become potentially very dangerous people because their wiring is all off. So, you know, there's so many reasons that I can say that this cause just it needs attention. It's time, even though it's kind of ahead of, you know, before, you know, I think society is ready for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I believe it's time. I believe it's time, and I got to keep talking about it. And, you know, 90 people might turn their head and say, I don't want to hear this, but 10 people will. And then it'll multiply with time. I believe it will. Yeah.
So you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Patrick, tell us a little bit about how people can contact you, what kind of information do you need, or what kind of information that you can give them? I mean, if the listening audience out there, or someone picked this up in Alabama or Arkansas or California or New Jersey, what would they do? Because we reach not only a national audience, but an international audience. How can people get in contact with you or your organization, and what do they need?
Well, like I said, we promote and lift up organizations that help abused males. We just this year, we came upon a new organization called Together We Heal, and they are funding free online anonymous therapy sessions to young men. Now, if you come my way, you're going to be able to locate that kind of service. The website is helpforguys.org, H-E-L-P, the number 4, guys, G-U-I-S.org. So that's the website. So you go there, you're going to find a huge hub of services, regional, international. You can find out prevention, But what we need, the thing is that, in the anti-abuse world, you've got these circle of survivors and people, and, we all kind of get together and do the thing, but we need to expand that outside. We need to get people who have not been abused to get sensitive to that. You got 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys being, sexually molested or assaulted before their 16th birthday. Now, that's the statistics that have been over and over. I mean, if you really think about 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys, that's millions, millions, millions of people.
Yeah.
But we need to get outside of the victim's circle. We need to start reaching people who haven't been abused and get them to understand that they have to be sensitive to it. I mean, I think people that haven't been abused, I just don't think they get it. And our job is to get them to get it. Why is it important? Why is it destroying your life, when you can't control your emotions and your feelings, and you can't stabilize yourself to where you can even accomplish a GED because you're just so messed up. I mean, they just don't get it. Why is this kid so messed up that he's shooting up heroin? They just don't understand how destructive the patterns are. I mean, if you go through your day and you're having PTSD, a flashbacks of somebody, doing incredibly horrible things to you, you can't stabilize your emotions. You can't get it together. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So it sounds like to me you need some advocates. You need some people, not only abuse, not only victims or survivors. You need some advocates, people out there are going to be supporting you, making sure that they have a person that hasn't been exposed in there so they can actually offer some service, things of the nature. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, the hard, like I said, it's like when the women's suffrage movement started, or when we started talking about, whenever you start some sort of conversation about something controversial, which you've been talking about Obamacare for the whole show, I can remember Ted Kennedy screaming at the Senate saying, mm-hmm. How much is enough money for you guys? Why can't we get these guys health care? I mean, that was what, 20, 25 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, they started talking about the Affordable Care Act, what, 50 years ago?
Yes,
and
yes.
And it took them, somebody like Obama to get in the spot to actually pull the damn thing through. But
exactly.
I feel like we're in those first stages where people just don't want to hear it. So our job is to get them to hear it and tell them why it's important, why your community is going to be safer if you help these young angry boys before they turn into fathers, before they, we need these young men to grow up and be the leaders in our community. We need them to be good fathers, good providers. We need them to be contributing to society. Now, this is how, this is the value of this cause, and this is the message we've got to get across to normal people and why they should care about this.
Absolutely.
So
what is this?
You got a young boy running around, mm-hmm. He's been raped and assaulted, and he thinks the way to satiate himself is to go and rape and assault.
Mm-hmm.
That makes your neighborhood dangerous.
Yeah,
that affects
absolutely.
You. Even if you haven't been abused, you might have a pretty little daughter that's walking around just trying to do her thing, go to the store, and that kid's going to attack her, and that is your problem. That is your problem. If you've never been abused, that is still your problem.
Yep.
That boy needs help. That boy doesn't need to be thrown into the corner and said, well, you know, he's a loser. He's just going to do whatever. No, that boy poses a threat to your community. This is why it's an important cause.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break, Petra. When we return, we're going to talk a little bit more about male abuse awareness. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, Petra, I want to talk a little bit about some of your success stories. Specifically, can you talk a little bit about the people that have contacted you, what you've been able to do for them, or some along those lines?
Well, people get inspired when they come to the website. You know what I'm saying? They get inspired when they come to the website. They get inspired when they see the videos. And they get inspired to – I'm sorry, I'm kind of lost in the question. Can you ask the question again? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so I was just thinking along the lines of, you know, you're providing this great service. And have you kept track of any metrics along the lines of how many people you've reached and what you've been able to provide them?
I understand the question now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand the question. Okay, the way that we monitor the success of this campaign is the number of hits on our videos, the number of hits on our website. the number of people that you know, contact us and said that they learned about this for the first time. You know, this is an awareness campaign. It's very hard to kind of assess, you know, how you've reached people, because awareness is a difficult thing to kind of monitor, you know. But if, you know, 5,000 or 10,000 more people heard about this cause and go, oh, I get it, then we've done our job. But how to monitor that, you don't know. I mean, how do you monitor breast cancer awareness? By how many women are getting treatment? How much mm-hmm. money is being put into research? You know, mm-hmm. it's a tough nut, but that's how we kind of evaluate and how we see the media and how they start following these stories, like Sandusky a few years ago, and Oprah had that show, and then, you know, and then the Corey Feldman thing this year, and, you know, this woman was, I don't care remember her name, she was an actress, she was arrested for domestic violence against her boyfriend. So, you know, this is how we kind of monitor the success of our event, of our, you know, Male Abuse Awareness Week.
Okay. We're going to go to the phone lines real quick. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from. Last four, 7736.
Oh, okay. Billy Walker from
Hey,
Georgia.
Billy, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thank you very much.
Now, Patrick, he's one of my board members, and the reason I had him call in, because we had a very interesting conversation this week about domestic violence and men, and he has a lot to say about that subject, and that's a very important subject. I read a book this year called Men Cry Alone by a man from the UK named Philip Paris, and he really took you into like three different situations of men in domestic violence situations and how, you know, kind of like what their house is like and how does it feel. And like in one situation, the wife, you know, they called 911 and he, you know, because the woman took after him with a pan and was knocking him in the head, and they arrested him. And he was a prominent person in society and he couldn't do anything about it. But, you know, I just think it's a real important topic this year because these situations are getting deadly. I mean, over a third of the calls into, you know, the law enforcement for domestic violence, and I 40%, I'm not sure, but it's around that those are calls for domestic violence. Now, we did an interview last week when the lady said it's about 50% of the calls in for domestic violence to the police are women abusing men. And we've interviewed about, you know, films now are talking about domestic violence against men. And this becomes very deadly. And I think this was a really topic I wanted to kind of focus on. Now, Billy is a former police officer. He's a former parole officer. He knows a lot about this. And because your guest couldn't call in, I wanted to see if he, you know, I texted him. I wanted him to call in because he can give a lot more insight into how dangerous it is when, you know, a woman goes after, you know, a man in a domestic violence situation, and how he doesn't want to hit her back and he doesn't know what to do. And, you know, Billy could probably, you know, he very eloquently told people, you know, what to do if that, tell the guys what to do if they're being beat by a woman and et cetera, et cetera. That's why I asked him to call in, if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Billy. Billy, so give us a little bit about who you are, your background, and let's talk a little bit about this domestic violence issue.
Okay. I got about just a tad under 20 years in law enforcement, retired. How do you want me to approach this, from what happened to me or when I was a law enforcement officer having to handle situations of domestic violence with women?
Why don't you start by just giving advice to men what to do if their woman is beating them? Do they call the police? Do they fight back? How do they defend themselves? What do they do in that situation?
Well, they need to, unless they fear for their life, they need to aggress the house and then try to find a friend or a neighbor, relative, and call 911. If they have marks on them, and, you know, they're dead serious about wanting their partner, put in jail. They need, to have a police report done. The police will come around, and then the domestic violent laws, I think it's in all states, if there are marks on the victim, it's a mandatory lockup and charge for the one that did it. If they can't get out of the house, they just need to dial 911 and lay the phone down if they have to, if they're still fending off blows, you know. So
Billy, let me ask you this. What about the perception in most cases when a call like that is received? Now I'm asking you to put on your law enforcement hat.
Okay.
Is it the case that if you hear a call like this and a man is being abused in this particular situation, what is the perception of the officer at that time? Is it that, you know, you take this as if it's a normal call, or is it the case that there is some kind of bias of it being playing into the picture, even if it's just a small bit?
Well, times have changed a lot. Back whenever I was doing it, most of what I did in law enforcement, I did a lot of different things, but most of it was being a parole officer. And like if you had a parolee get out of prison and you had a valid residence plan with either, you know, a common law relationship or a marriage, and the person that would... the other half a lot of times would try to manipulate him into doing something that either he didn't want to do, maybe he was doing something wrong, he could have been, you know, doing drugs or whatever, but they wanted to use the parole officer like a paddle. They didn't have, a lot of times they didn't want him to go back to prison, but they would call us, and so that puts us in a position of liability. And I'd get a call at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, from a woman saying that John is running around the house and he's acting crazy and he's threatening me, and I want you to come lock him up. And what I would do is get up and suit up and drive sometimes, you know, my territory a lot of times, you know, I could drive up to 60 or 70 miles at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, I would, if I couldn't get him on the phone, I would try to get him on the phone first, but if I couldn't, I would go on to the residence before I just did a blanket stamp call to what they call Stone Mountain to get a warrant. And I wanted to see his demeanor, see if he was truly acting dangerous. And a lot of times that wasn't the case, and he'd come out and get in my vehicle with me, and we would talk, and I would tell him that he needed, you know, I would even drive him a lot of times to, this was more on more than one occasion, but I would drive him to a friend's house or something, and let the the other party calm down, and a lot of times that would fix the problem right there. I didn't know exactly what was going on, but just getting them apart and letting them cool down. But I don't ever recall having any situations beyond trying to use me as a tool. I don't recall any situations, unless my memory got jogged or something, where, you know, I got a call and the man had a bunch of marks on him and things like that.
Okay. So is there a kind of perceived psychological impact of the male victim when he calls in? I mean, is he kind of seem kind of withdrawn or anything along those lines when you encounter those situations? I mean, what's the demeanor of the victim, the male victim, when he's been abused in such a way, even if it's verbally, physically, sexually, whatever the situation may be? What's the demeanor of the victim?
Well, you got to realize these guys are on parole and they're under a lot of strain. They do not want to go back to prison. And even if they hadn't done anything wrong and the other half, you know, that they're living with says that they did, they're psychologically whooped. By the time that I get to them, I would try to get to them before law enforcement got involved, with the exception of, you know, if it was a registered sex offender or somebody that had done, you know, 15 years and paroled out for murder. In those cases, I went ahead and got a warrant and covered myself. I had to, and would have police waiting, so we would all go to the residence, because you don't know who's right and who's wrong, and that's a much more unstable situation. As far as just a parolee that went to prison and got, you know, sold some drugs or something, went to prison and got out, more of what I call normal type inmates, they would just be psychologically whipped more than verbal, more mentally whipped than physically. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, their partner was wanting them to do, you know, was mad because they were drunk or had the perception that they were drunk or were using drugs. It would be different reasons. And I'm sure that they did take some blows, but I don't ever recall, you know, myself. I'm sitting here racking my brain because, I made several hundred visits like that. And
wow.
But most of the time, you know, I would just relocate that person and tell him to stay with someone else until, because he generally was going to be the breadwinner of the house. And maybe, you know, his partner was on drugs or something, was wanting money, and he wasn't wanting to give money into something like that, or maybe he was on drugs. I mean, there's always two sides to every story. But the main thing was to, you know, get the parolee out of that particular situation and get him into, you know, a lot of times he wouldn't have a ride. And, you know, it's in a bad neighborhood at 12 or 1 in the morning, you know, and get him to a friend's house and just tell him to stay there until the other person calmed down. And then I would tell him, if the other person called him by phone, to have that person call me at the parole office, because generally that person would be very incensed whenever I got there. And, But I don't remember any situations. I know they happen, but I don't remember any situations as a parole officer where there were actual physical marks. I probably had a few happen, but I'm just, you know, I don't remember them right now.
Right.
But that's about.
So a
I don't
couple
know
more
if I answered your.
Yeah, you did. A couple more questions with respect to you having your law enforcement hat on. Then we'll switch to the other side. You mentioned about some abuse yourself, so I want to talk to that too. But do you find it that most of the victims are reluctant to call you or to get help at all because of, you know, based on their situation? And when they do call you, what are the majority of the cases that you see? Is it more drug related, or is it more physical abuse, or is it something else?
Okay, are the police involved? I mean, give me a scenario here. Is it mainly just an argument and maybe a possible abuse situation that the police don't know about at this point, and the man calls me?
Yeah, so let's get into the cases where the police are involved, because typically if the police get involved, that's kind of like the next step, right? I mean, people generally want to stay out of law enforcement.
When the police get involved, then they're going to take over. And I kind of, at that point, take a back seat, because sometimes we work together whenever we make arrests, and sometimes they arrest the parolee, and I won't know about it till the next day, you know, whenever I go into the office. but if the parolee is being abused, and if he calls me up, I tell him, do you have any marks on you, and if he says he does, I say if I'm not in a position at the moment when he calls where I can get to him, I just tell him, you need to get out of there, call the police, show them, show them the marks on your arms because of the domestic violence law. I said, but be sure that this is what you want to do because this person that you love that's doing this, they're going to get locked up. So I said, make sure it's for real. And it's not just, it's not something else that's causing this.
Right.
But most of the time it would be women calling me more than the men would. The women would call and they would say, John's acting crazy. I had one guy on parole and I don't know how many times, he was kind of a player. And I don't know how many times the same woman would call and say that he beat her, he hit her. And when I would look into it further, she would, back up on what she said. And, of course, he would say, you just got to know this girl. And I'd say, look, and I'd tell him, I'd say, look, man, this particular person is going to put you back in prison for something that you didn't do.
Right.
I said it's going to end up getting you mad enough where you pop her upside the head or knock some teeth out, and then it gets real. And then I have to start doing paperwork and get a warrant on you, and, and then you go back to prison. I said you need to get away from this person and find somebody else. When you become a parole officer, you become a lot of people don't realize it, but you become an integral part of the family. You really do.
Wow. So you mentioned that there was another situation, I guess, that you also had some experience with male abuse awareness, and what would you want to describe what that is?
Yeah, back in the 90s, I got married to this gal. She was about 12 years younger than me. There were some things that had happened to her. She was a very beautiful girl, very talented. But I did not detect it initially. And we went ahead, and got married and everything. I would say within about 5 or 6 months, she got to insult me a little bit, and I asked her not to do that, but she didn't pay any attention, and she got where, it was, just about a nightly thing where we were having arguments, and she got where she was spitting and biting. She had some sort of, at that time, a personality disorder. I don't know what it was. And there's two sides to every story, I know, but I did, I did everything in my power. I was raised up, you don't hit women. Right. I got hit, I got knocked upside the head, I don't know how many times, jumped on, and, I know how to defend myself, passively without going beyond the passive into the aggressive. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Just like if you arrest somebody, you don't beat them up, even if they're trying to fight back. You use the minimal amount of force to make the arrest. And sometimes it's a lot of force, and sometimes it's a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But in the situation with her, she was very strong. She didn't weigh but about 105 pounds, but she had the strength of about a 200-pound man.
Mm.
And, and she had a lot of rage. It was just blowing me away, after about a year had gone by, she had kicked in full force. And as much as I hate to admit it, about 2 years into it, she had some sort of a pet peeve. I was working with the state, and she had this pet peeve. A lot of times I would as long as my boss man knew about it, I mean, if I worked some overtime, you could take what was called comp time. So if I worked 4 or 5 extra hours at night seeing people, you know, the next day I could sleep in early if there, mm-hmm. you know, if nothing urgent needed to be tended to. And she could not stand that. And she was working very hard at the job, but, she would come in and berate me while I was, you know, still sleeping late that day. I mean, I had, you know, already got it straight with my boss. And mm-hmm. that's what I went to college for, was to be able to get a job, you know, where I could have flexible hours.
Right.
And, but anyway, she couldn't stand it, and one day I took off work early, and she had mentioned she wanted some lights to some of these little solar powered lights to highlight a driveway to the house, and I guess we were about 2.5 years into the marriage at that point, and so I took off work early, and I went to Walmart, and I got home early, spent a couple of hours. Got stung by a bunch of fire ants. I was pretty mad about that, but I got the lights put out like she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got home, she walked in and she said, "Well, I see you got off work early today." I said, "Yeah, I put some lights out there for you as a surprise." She said, "You only did that just so you had an excuse to get off work." And then she walked up to me and put her finger on my chest and she said, "I think you're a son of a bitch." And I said, "Do what?" I said, "Wait a minute now." I said, "You don't put your finger on my chest." I said, "You're you're stepping over from woman territory to man territory."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Do not put your finger on my chest and disrespect me." I said, "Now, I said, the best thing to do is for you to calm down, and I'm going to walk into the other room." Well, she didn't calm down. She got madder, and she put her finger a second time on my chest, and she said, "I think you're a son of a bitch." And I said, "For what?" I said, you said you wanted these lights put out." She said, "I just said, you know, you did that as an excuse just to come home early." I said, "Oh, like I'm coming home early just to make you have a bad day." And she, you know, she got madder. And I said, "Well, I'm going to go into the other room. Why don't you stay in here and let's just calm down?" Well, she grabbed me around the waist and started punching on me. And I know it looked kind of silly if somebody was watching, but I was literally dragging her into the other room. And when we got in there, she started hitting me with her fist. And I'm sorry, after 2.5 years of it, I cold cocked her. And that was the only time I ever laid hands on her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got really mad and kicked me between the legs and sprayed me in the face with deodorant. Mm. She had it down, man. And I said, "Look," I said, "if you're going to act like a youngin," I said, "you're going to get treated like one." And I picked her up and threw her over my knee. Yanked her britches down, and I spanked her, just like you'd spank a youngin, hard. And by the time I got through, I was crying. I mean, I'd broken a code, but she had calmed down after a couple of hours, and 2 or 3 days later, she kind of said something offhand that she deserved it. And I said, "No," I said, "you didn't deserve it like that." I said, "I got pushed into a corner."
Mm-hmm.
But she continued to talk bad and kind of act bizarre. After she left, she eventually left me in 1997, and so people normally is it, you know, the spouse is always the last one to find out, as they say. But I learned that she had some, I'll just call it daddy issues. And read between the lines. And I think that during our marriage, she was trying to get out of the house to get away from him. And But I know that after she left and I went ahead and initiated divorce proceedings, you know, within a week, I waited 7 days for her to call because she left. Her, mm-hmm. She had her whole family come and take everything out of the house while I was at work without letting me know, which I thought was disrespectful. But, hey, you know, whatever. They didn't take anything that they weren't supposed to, so that part was good. But anyway, it was a bad scene, and I would say that was in February when we officially divorced, and within about 2 months she had a boyfriend. And anyway, she was with him for a while, and this was after the divorce, and I transferred to another office, and the day that I walked in that office, I mean, I literally was putting my things on the desk to start straightening up the office, and a phone call gets transferred to me, and it's her. And I hadn't heard from her in several months, and she wanted to know if I wanted to ride with her to go help do some decorations, and I'm like, completely confused. How did she know that I had moved? And why she's got a boyfriend, and why is she wanting me to go with her somewhere? And I said, you got a boyfriend. We're not together anymore. He's off at training. I said, so while he's off at training, you're going to just call me up and like for a booty call or something? And she got mad, and I said, he seems like a nice guy. Seems like he's got it going. Y'all are closer in age. I said, you need to stick with him. And she ended up marrying him, had a child by him, and they had it was way, way, way worse than it was when I was, she put him through it, man. And they had police going out there. I don't think he ever got locked up or she ever got locked up, but she's on her third marriage now, and they saw a therapist or something, but she's smoothed out, and I hadn't talked to her in many years. Wish him the best.
Right. You know, when all of this was happening to you, did you ever consider any of this to be abuse?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And
I kept thinking mm-hmm. that I would be able to, talk her out of it, but it didn't. But what was happening is that I think there was some things still going on between her and her daddy, and they were sticking their noses in our business. And
so if somebody else was in a similar situation, I mean, going through, obviously, when listening to the story, there were several instances where the abuse began to escalate, and it started off one way, and it moved into a little bit more, and it started to evolve into something else. What recommendations could you give to someone that was experiencing something similar in a situation? You know, even at the beginning stages, middle stages, or at the end, where it finally got to a point where some violence ensued. What kind of recommendations would you give someone?
Well, and this comes from my personal experiences and also from law enforcement experience. I mean, once somebody starts abusing, they're not going to stop. It's going to keep getting worse, and somebody's going to end up getting marks. And the one that did the marks is, with today's domestic violence laws, the one that leaves the marks is the one that's going to go to jail and lose some rights if they get convicted. Even a misdemeanor domestic violence is not something you want to have on your record. You know, if you go for a job or, anything. Did I answer your question okay? Or?
Yep, absolutely. What I've heard basically is the sooner you get someone some assistance or some help or get someone else involved, the better you're off. Because if it's going to continue to escalate over time, it's going to get to a point, even if you being the one that's being abused, they may be the one to actually get in trouble for it because it has escalated into something to a point of no return, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I suggested, when we were married, you know, toward the end, I suggested marriage counseling. And then, you know, she comes up that her father was a preacher and her father was wanting to do the marriage counseling. Yeah. That's a stat, Dick.
did you have any services available to you while you were going through this, or did you know of any at the time?
No, I didn't. I live in a extremely rural county, and you know, in Georgia, you could probably, you know, drive 70 or 80 miles and find something, but she wasn't cooperative as wanting to, you know, she wasn't wanting to do it.
Right. So it could potentially be a lot of people in your particular situation going through that. The situation that you experienced was going through some type of abuse, not being able to have access to immediate services. And I think, I think that's the whole purpose of what Petra does, right? Is to make people aware of the services that are available to them. So they're going through similar situations, or even if it has not escalated to a point, they still can have something available to them. So what's your capacity? What capacity are you working with Petra?
Right now, I have a blog. You go to helpforguys.org. I just, I give credit, of course, but I publish a lot of articles and things that have to do with various aspects of abuse. Petra and I have, there's a book that it'll probably be about another year, but we're in the phases of doing the final proofreading. But Petra and I we wrote it together back in the, before 2010 or 2011, and then Petra has gone back and added some things, and she's had some other professionals go over it. But I have stopped, you know, for the holidays, but around the beginning of the year, I've got to get finished proofreading it and get it back to her.
Awesome. Well, that was a very interesting story, and I'm glad you shared it with us, shared it with the listeners. I'm sure they can draw a lot of strength and courage from listening to that. And we're closing in on the end of the show, and I wanted to get Petra to weigh back in. Petra, you still with us?
Absolutely, I'm still with you.
Wow, that's wonderful. So as we get ready to close out, kind of give me your final thoughts around male abuse awareness. Kind of give us a wrap up of the week's events and talk about your plans for the future.
Well, like I said, we did, terrestrial and internet radio shows all week. And then we had our events in San Francisco yesterday. It was a beautiful sunny day in downtown San Francisco. We reached, thousands and thousands of people saw, what we do. So we're doing our mission. Our mission is to get people to know about, males are abused. Let's talk about it, awareness. For the future, I want to go to Comic-Con. I don't know if you know what Comic-Con is, but it's a comic video game sort of convention. And I have the little, the little Ma Man, the character that you have on your, you have a picture of him on your website, the little character with the X in his eye.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Well, what I want to do is I want to go and I want to get some, I want to wear that T-shirt and go around that convention and see about, somehow either improving on that design or evolving that design, or maybe getting that character into some sort of a video game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to get, I think the character, you know, if you can get him into some sort of a game where he's, I don't know, doing something, you know, I don't know, beating something up to get his anger out or doing something.
Right.
I don't know. I can't even conceptualize it in my head what he would be doing, but if he was brought to life, you know, I think it would be a really powerful thing if, you know, it would attract more young people, and they would ask, well, what's the backstory on my man? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I might have to create a backstory
on him, like, you know, I have to create, like, some sort of backstory, maybe just take a test I want from a real person, because, you know, real life is stranger than fiction. So, you know, get a backstory on him, get him, turn him into a character, bring him to life. That's something I want to do next year. And I think my board wants me to go back to San Diego and do an event next year, but I'm just really itching to go to Vegas.
Mm.
So, I might try and do something interesting and bizarre in Vegas for next year. You know, it's nice to get back, and maybe I'm not a great business woman. I mean, it's great to get back to where, you know, the funding is coming. But if you don't get around to different cities, you know, my goal is to get to a different city every year and
get it
out there every year to a different place. That's what I enjoy doing. But, you know, we still have to kind of figure out what that's going to be. But, you know, looking forward, and Billy, he mentioned that book. Now, that book, it'll probably be done by the end of 14, but this is a complete guide to every single aspect of how to detect who is a child molester in your world, in your life, who is around, who, what do they look like? You know, what do they act like? What do they do? You know, what kind of things are they involved with, so you can detect who they are, even if they're in your home, because most child molesters are in your home. People don't like to hear that, but they're in your home. And, you know, that's a big reason why Male Abuse Awareness Week is during the holidays, because these kids are going into these homes and they don't want to go there, and there's a good reason for it. You know, a lot of molestation, a lot of child rape, a lot of things happen during the holidays. And then, you know, you've got adults going into situations with their past abusers, and it's just craziness on top of craziness with a side of craziness. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But also that book is how to detect if your child, I mean, just being sensitive to what your child is going through, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, child molesters use very threatening means to keep their activity silent. And this book will help you detect, without the child telling you, you can probably detect if your child's being abused.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem is getting people to believe that it's happening. And,
right.
You know, hopefully this book, they'll start, you know, believing that the world is not all, you know, ponies and flowers and stuff like that. So it's a great book, and, you know, I hope to get it out there, and I hope it's a success. So that's what I'm looking forward to next year.
So you're gonna keep updates on your blog, and tell the listening audience your blog one more time.
Oh, Billy, tell them about your blog. He gets like 20,000 hits a month on that.
Wow.
24,000 since about March.
Wow,
I think
awesome.
I've been doing it a little longer.
Oh, I thought that was a month. But hey, that's not bad either. Wow.
So talk a little bit about. So tell the listening audience your website again, Petra, and tell us a little bit about your blog.
Okay, the website is helpforguys.org, ATLP, the number 4 guys, GUYS.org. You can get services there. You can just do research on male abuse and what it is. You can see videos. You can read about celebrities who've been molested. You got contacts. You got advocates. You can make friends there. All kinds of resources. Go to the guest book. Leave a comment. You know, and that's what the website is. It's the Male Abuse Awareness website. And, you know, follow us on Twitter, PLUNA Foundation. It's at PLUNA Foundation. And, you know, just Male Abuse Awareness Week is also on Facebook. So, hit us up. We're on Google Plus too. So, and I'm going to, have you tried Tom Miller yet?
Is that the meat, Petra? No, what was the question again?
That's a new social networking site. You know what I'm saying?
I have not, but I will definitely check it out after we get through here.
Yeah, I think it's one that everybody needs to start moving into. But anyway, that's what it is. But I'll let Billy tell you about his blog.
Okay. Yeah, Billy, tell us a little bit about your blog.
Well, the access that you can go to the PLUNA website and then branch off at helpforguys.org. You can go in there and you'll see, I don't know if the term is widget, but...
There's a link, yeah, to the blog.
Do what?
There's a link to the blog on the homepage of helpforguys.org.
Oh, okay. Then it's been a day or two. But, okay, just click it right there, then, and it'll carry you straight to it.
Awesome. All right, well, I thank you all for joining us today. And Petra, this is another year. I can't believe it. It's been 4 or 5 years as we've been doing this, and I really thank you. I really applaud your efforts. Billy, I see that you're doing a lot of wonderful, great things, too, as well. And I wish you all both much, much, much more success. Petra, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you next year, and hopefully we'll get Ken to call next year.
All righty, will do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, I'd like to thank all the listeners for tuning in, and a special thanks to Barbara, that's right, a.k.a. Petra Luna, and her sidekick, Billy. Thanks for joining. We appreciate it. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog. That's at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Sweet dreams. Take us away, Joyce.